So let's move on to Sam Upton talk on transforming to the highly regular gauge for second order.
Hi, everyone. Is that okay? Can you see my screen okay? Great. So thank you for the introduction, Peter. I'm Sam Upton. I'm a PhD student at the University of Southampton, and this is work that I've been undertaking with my supervisor, Adam Pound, with these collaborators as well. So today I'm going to be talking about how we transform to the highly regular gauge to use this in the second order cell force calculations. So as we heard from Adam, we know that second order cell force is crucial for emery detection with LISA. But one difficult aspect of performing second order cell force calculations is the strong divergence of the second order singular field near the world line of the small object. And this generically goes like m squared over r squared. And this is true if you just generically pick a gauge, including the Lorentz gauge, which is the gauge that has been used so far for all cell force calculations. However, it was previously shown by Adam in this paper, and we expanded upon it in this paper, that there exists a highly regular gauge where the second order singular field goes like m squared over r. Now, this has a number of benefits. One of the main ones is that with a weaker divergence, we can now define all terms in the second order Einstein field equations distributionally. This nicely leads on to us being able to define a second order stress energy tensor. And we refer to the stress energy tensor through second order as the Detweiler stress energy tensor. So with the existing cell force data, second order cell force data in the Lorentz gauge, we want to transform this into the highly regular gauge to take advantage of the benefits, such as the existence of a second order stress energy and the distributional definitions. And as Ben and Andrew have discussed, this will be used as input into the second order Tucholsky equation. So first of all, I'd just like to go over what the benefits of the highly regular gauge are. So this allows the second order Einstein field equations to be well-defined as distributions. This results from the most singular term in the source. There's the quadratic part d2g of hs1. This in fact only goes like m squared over r squared. This is different to a generic gauge such as the Lorentz, where it has this form, m squared over r to the 4, which is much more singular. So it is possible to define terms distributionally in the Lorentz gauge, which myself and Adam showed in our paper. It's quite a bit trickier to do this. It relies on knowledge of the highly regular gauge and also the knowledge of the local form of HS1 and the second order singular field. But with our terms well-defined as distributions, we can now this now gives us a well-defined second-order stress energy tensor, which is given by this nice form here. So this form is valid under any smooth gauge transformation, just it's a change in this regular field. So this regular field here, R1, is specific to the new gauge that you're in. But apart from that, the form is unchanged. And as I stated in the introduction, we can combine this with the first order stress energy tensor for a point particle to form the Detweiler stress energy tensor. So here we write T1, the stress energy for a point particle, and T2, which is given by this expression. And we can write it in this compact form, which we see is nothing more than the stress energy tensor of a point particle in the effective space-time made up of the background metric G and the regular field perturbations. So this confirms the conjecture that Detweiler made back in 2012, which is why we named this the Detweiler stress energy tensor. So how do we transform to the highly regular gauge? Well, first we need to know what the gauge conditions are for the highly regular gauge. So one gauge condition is that it's based on light cones. So when we contract with a null vector, we see on this diagram here, K is a null vector. We contract the perturbations, they vanish. And also if we take a trace with the metric on the unit 2 sphere, then the perturbations vanish as well. So this gives the geometrical interpretation that we have a constant spheres, we have spheres of constant luminosity distance in the background and the perturbed space-time. And these gauge conditions are just inherited from the light cone gauge that we that the highly regular gauge is constructed from, which the light cone gauge is from this paper by Poisson. So we now want to transform, to take advantage of the form of the highly regular gauge, we want to transform the first order singular field from the Lorentz gauge. We saw back in the introduction, in the benefits of the highly regular gauge slide, that it's D2G HS1, which is the most problematic piece of the second order Einstein equations. So if we transform the singular field into the highly regular gauge, we should be able to pick up the nice benefit of only going like m squared over r squared. So we use the standard transformation law for a first order perturbation, given by this this expression here. So I should note as well that we are hypothesizing that the regular field is unchanged between the two gauges. That's something that we're just checking at the moment. There appears to be a bit of subtlety about what's going on. Even if it isn't quite the same, then that would just be added on into the into T2. So instead of HR1, we'd have HR1 plus some perturbation, some gauge transformation. So even if there is a change, it shouldn't be a problem. So this HS1 in the Lorentz gauge is given by this paper with Heffernan, Ottewell, and Wardell, and Pound and Miller. So we want to solve for the gauge vector. So how do we do that? We expand in powers of the world line, lambda here. So we make an ansatz for our gauge vector, expand through order lambda, so that we satisfy the gauge condition on the world line. And then we impose the gauge conditions here from this previous slide and solve order by order in lambda. So previously, in collaboration with Andrew Spires, we found that the gauge vector is given by this expression here. So unprimed indices are points in the field, and primed indices are points on the world line, and these are joined by some unique geodesic. G here is the parallel propagator. Rho gives you a notion of spatial distance. P is just projection operator, and sigma is a derivative of Singer's world function. So Singer's world function is just half the geodesic distance squared. We then want to perform a coordinate expansion in terms of the coordinate difference between these two points. So I should mention here, we wanted our expansion through order lambda. It turns out that there are no order lambda terms because in the Lorentz gauge, they just appear as acceleration terms, which can be moved into the second order singular field, the second order field. However, when we perform our coordinate expansion, we do find terms appearing at order lambda. So it's important that we keep track of these terms as well. Now we want to move on to performing a spherical harmonic mode decomposition. We follow the method outlined in the papers by Heffernan, Ottewell, Wardell, and Warburton. To do so, we introduce a rotated coordinate system. So we take our standard Schwarzschild coordinates, rotate to this alpha beta coordinate so that the small object is always at the north pole. This has the nice property that when we perform our decomposition, all but the lowest m modes vanish when we evaluate at the north pole. So instead of having to calculate tens of, or maybe hundreds of M modes, we only have to calculate the lowest few. I say lowest few because it depends on some derivatives that we take. And then near the North Pole, we adopt a quasi-Cartesian coordinate system, this W1, W2. We calculate all the gauge vector components in this coordinate system, and then we transform back to alpha and beta to perform the mode decomposition. And this is just nice as it avoids a coordinate singularity in alpha and beta. We then combine this with the mode, we construct the perturbations from this gauge, from the mode decomposition, and then we combine this with the first order singular field provided in this paper to find the singular field in the highly regular gauge. So we perform a mode decomposition in the standard way. The scalar parts are just decomposed with scalar spherical harmonics, and then we decompose the vector sector into even and odd vector spherical harmonics, where they're just given by the various covariant derivatives. So we have our expression in alpha and beta. We've performed all the integrals we need to perform. We now want to rotate back to the theta and phi components. So this actually shows going from theta and phi to alpha and beta. So to do this, we use the Wigner-D matrix. This uses Euler angles to represent rigid body rotations. In our case, this takes the azimuthal position, drags it back to phi equals zero, and pull ourselves up to the North Pole, and then we align our tangent vectors with our coordinate alpha. And we can write all the mode coefficients in this way as a sum over m. So I should say m prime is in the alpha beta coordinate, and m is just in the theta and phi. And then we can use these expressions found by Spires, Wardell, and Pound to reconstruct the first-order perturbations from the gauge vector. And then we can resum these. We write it in the Carter tetrad, which is a null tetrad, and we write it in terms of spin-weighted spherical harmonics. So here, these would just be normal scalar harmonics, and then each m increases the spin weight by one. So this would be a spin weight one spherical harmonic, and each m bar reduces it by one. So this would be spin weight minus one. And here's just the full expressions that we would use here. And then we can get the L and N components by contracting in. So here, alpha and beta is in the TR plane. We just get the L and N components by contracting in the relevant basis. So we now want to check with our metric perturbations constructed. We now want to check the gauge conditions. So here, it's hard to see from this plot exactly, but we do have convergence exactly on the world line, which is what we hoped for. Unfortunately, as we move away from the world line, so as we sum up more L and L modes, this convergence gets better and better. Unfortunately, as soon as we move away from the world line, this convergence, this starts to diverge. So when we perform the mode decomposition, we actually, when we perform our alpha integrals, we get an expansion in delta r, but we truncated this at order lambda to match the gauge vector expansion. This is going to be the cause for our divergence when we sum away, when we sum over L for delta r doesn't equal zero, because we're performing expansion around a singular quantity. So if we don't take care to keep all these terms, we're going to get a divergence. And now recently we started to recompute the integrals exactly instead of performing an expansion. This makes the integral slightly trickier to perform, but we believe we should be able to do at least most of them analytically. Maybe some will have to be done numerically as well. The null condition check, unfortunately, this gives us four conditions, each for one of the legs of the Carter tetrad. Unfortunately, none of these conditions are satisfied anywhere in space-time, including on the small object. It's not entirely clear why this happened so far. We're looking into it. There's could be an error in some of the decompositions we've made. So we're going through and we're checking this, but we believe this should be able to overcome this. So in summary, I've discussed the benefits of the highly regular gauge, what it will bring to cell force calculations. With the weaker singularity near the world line, we can then define our second order Einstein field equations distributionally, which gives us a well-defined T2. A well-defined source will allow us to use the second order Tucholsky formalism, which was discussed previously by Andrew and Ben. This will avoid the use of a puncture scheme. And additionally, any a weaker divergence in D2G, it'd be also useful for any other calculation that would require this as a source term. So we would have a divergence of m squared over r squared instead of m squared over r to the 4. I additionally discussed first steps towards implementing the highly regular gauge in Schwarzschild space-time. And as we've seen, one gauge condition is satisfied on the small object, while unfortunately the other fails everywhere in space-time so far. But we believe we'll be able to overcome these issues. Thank you very much.